Everyone, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Jackie. Yay. It's good to be here and to be sober tonight. I want to thank Damien for inviting me to come down here. And I appreciate being invited anywhere and being able to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. When I got here in December of 1984, I can assure you that there were no invitations being extended for me to do anything other than come to court, meet with the lawyer about how I'm going to get out of jail, doing all that other kind of stuff. And so I appreciate being here. I wasn't so excited about 1:30 or 2 o'clock this afternoon when I was trying to get out of work a little early and thinking about driving down here. But I hope I never forget what length I'm willing to go to in order to do the thing that's saving my butt. And I appreciate that, and I appreciate being invited. I want to welcome the folks who identified as being new to Alcoholics Anonymous, whether this is your first time or your 100th time. I hope that you find something here tonight, that you find some piece of identification that gets you to come back one more time. And I also want to let you know that AA is not a revolving door. If you hear that in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to be one of the ones to tell you that it is not a revolving door. I've had to bury many people that I sponsor because they forgot that this maybe one more time it was going to work this time and it didn't work for them. And they drank themselves to death or shot themselves or overdosed or whatever else that we do when we're out there doing what we do. And so welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't leave here tonight without a book, Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys had your literature guy stand up a couple times. And don't leave here tonight without a sponsor. I need a sponsor. I need somebody today that I'm accountable to, that I'm honest with, that I tell the truth to no matter what, even though I don't want to sometimes, most times, really, if you want to know the truth about it. But I know if I don't do those things today that I will get drunk, that I will drink and I will – I'm not afraid of drinking and dying. I'm afraid of drinking and living because the way that I was living out there is a way that I don't ever want to go back to ever again. I want to thank Maureen for her 10-minute talk. We could be done. That's it. I mean, she said all you needed to hear tonight. She was telling my story and then some. And I won't I won't bore you with all those details. But anyway, I appreciate you sharing your experience. And I definitely identified. I'm not, from a large Irish Catholic family. I didn't grow up in Boston, but I drank like you did, and I did some of the things probably that you did. And that's what makes me an alcoholic. Now, I'm the youngest of two. I grew up in a pretty crazy household. I want to tell you that that's not why I'm an alcoholic. It's not because I'm the youngest. It's not because I grew up in the Catholic Church or any of the other stuff that you hear around here. I'm an alcoholic because there's something strangely weird about me as an individual. What it is I get out of jail on Sunday morning, and I forget that I was in jail. And Sunday night, I'm drinking again because my brain has already told me that it's going to be okay this time. And it's not, it's their fault, it's his fault, it's the whatever. And I make an excuse and I drink again. And that's that insanity that they talk in step two. They're not talking about all the stupid things that we do when we're out there drinking. Because you know what? I know people who are normal, quote unquote, drinkers who go out and have a little bit too much to drink and do stupid things. That's not insane. The insanity is the belief that this time it's going to be different. And this time it's not going to happen the way it happened every other time that it did for me. And if that was the only thing that's wrong, that would be it. But what the other thing that's wrong with me is I have this allergy that our book talks about. And I take one drink, no matter what it is, just one drink. I just go out to have a couple of drinks with my friends because I really believe that that's what's going to happen. And I set up this allergy and I can't stop. And the book says, in the doctor's opinion, it explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. And that's why I'm an alcoholic, because those two things. It's not because what my parents did or didn't do to me. I was molested from the time I was 9 till the time I was 12. That's not the reason. A whole lot of other things that I could list for you, but that's not why I'm an alcoholic. And I hope I never forget that. And the way I don't have to forget that is I stay busy in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a home group. It's the Bellflower Big Book Group. Our main meeting meets on Monday night, and that's one of the meetings that I go to on a regular basis. I'm there every Monday night, and I'm the commitment captain. It's no big deal, really, except the very first night after elections, there were 200 people lined up to get a commitment at my home group. And that's how serious we are about being sober. And so and I'm happy to be in the middle of a group like that. I'm grateful that I found a group when I moved out here that's busy and active and loves Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the life that I have today, and I can tell you that it wasn't that way when I got here. The book says that I'm supposed to share in a general way what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like today, or what I'm like today. A lot of times you hear people say what it was like. Well, it wasn't really that bad, really, if you want to know the truth about it. I wasn't unemployed. I wasn't living on Skid Row. I hadn't been to a psych ward like some of my friends in AA. Hadn't been to prison. I'd gone to jail a few times, but, you know, what's jail a couple of times? You know, it's no big deal. And I don't ever want to forget all that stuff, and so that's why I'm busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so that's what I'm supposed to do. There's another line in the book, in the front of the book. It says, each person will tell you in their own way how they formed a personal relationship with a power greater than themselves. And that wasn't good news when I got here either, because I didn't want to hear anything about God or higher power or any of that other stuff, because I just had a whole lot of screwed up beliefs about what I thought that was really about. What I learned is from taking the steps with a sponsor out of the book, and that's where I learned to have this relationship with this power greater than myself, and I'll tell you a little bit about that as I go along. And so that's kind of what it is. I want to thank my friend Tim for driving down here with me. We kind of go all over the place sometimes when we you know, one of us talks somewhere and he talks and I talk. And that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you jump in the car with somebody, it's the meeting before the meeting. We went and had dinner and, you know, got here. I appreciate being welcomed. You guys had your hands out. You're excited. You're enthusiastic. And I can tell that this is a real group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love that. I didn't get sober here in California. It took me a long time here to realize that you guys were doing it just fine. I got sober on the East Coast, and I was fortunate that I was in the middle of a group of Alcoholics Anonymous who loved Alcoholics Anonymous, and I appreciate that. I took my first drink when I was 9 or 10 years old. I couldn't wait any longer. I waited as long as I could. I have a book. I don't even know why I keep it. Sometimes I find it every once in a while while I'm cleaning house and thinking I'm going to throw stuff away. I have all these old report cards, and the report cards all say the same thing. Jackie needs to keep his mouth shut. Jackie needs to be quiet. Jackie needs to sit still. My sponsor tells me that sometimes today. Shut up. Why don't you try keeping your mouth closed? Those kinds of things. And I was this wound-up little kid who never felt like I belonged anywhere. I remember when I was in the fourth grade, a friend of mine got hit on the playground, and he got airlifted because he broke his back. And the only thing that I could think of is, why couldn't that happen to me? And so I spent like a week or 10 days or 2 weeks or whatever it was trying to break my collarbone with a hammer. That's the truth. And I didn't work because it hurt, really, if you want to know the truth. It hurt. Go try doing it when you get home tonight. Get a hammer out. Try, you know, banging your collarbone for a little while and see if it does anything. And it didn't work. And so that's just the kind of kid I was. I just selfish. What I know today is it's selfish and self-centered. I think the world revolves around me, and I just don't feel like I fit in anywhere. And I just knew that you guys had this book, that you got all the answers to live in life. And I never got the book. And so I felt like this screwed up little kid. And no matter where I went, I didn't feel like I fit in. You guys were doing it this way. I felt like I just was off. And so a buddy of mine one time, I grew up in Orlando, Florida, and my father was in the military, so there was booze in the house all the time, completely opposite from your family. The booze was never untouched in our house, that's for sure. My father had a box out in the garage. He called it a beer box. And that's exactly what it was. He filled with beer, Pabst Blue Ribbon, if you really call that beer. But it did the trick. You know, the book says we drink essentially because we like the effect produced by alcohol. I didn't drink because I liked the taste. I drank because I liked the effect. And I didn't know that till I got here. I thought I drank because I liked the taste, but I drank because I liked the effect. And so my friend Roger and I decided one night we were going to camp out in his backyard. We pitched a tent. And we were gonna camp out. It's Florida. It's summertime. It's kind of what you do. And the next thing, bright idea that we had was we were going to go and steal a bottle of wine from the local 7-Eleven. And so we went in and we stole a bottle of Mad Dog 2020. Now, some people call that wine. I don't really know that it really had anything to do with a grape. But what happened for me that night is this is exactly what happened. And I want to tell you also, if you're kind of squeamish and you don't like people talking about bodily fluids and wetting your pants and puking and all that stuff, close your ears or talk to your sponsor after this, because I don't ever want to forget that that's the kind of drunk I am. I'm not the guy that goes out for a couple drinks and, you know, all of a sudden shows up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm the guy that once I start, I have no idea where I'm going to stop. I have no idea where I'm going to end up. And so what happened that night is we went out and stole that bottle of wine, and I don't remember really much of anything. I'm a blackout drinker, thank God. I am thankful for blackouts. My friend Tim talks about the fact that he's not a blackout drinker, and I am grateful to this day that I'm a blackout drinker. I have friends that after the day after would try to fill in the blanks from the night before. I didn't want the blanks filled in. I didn't want to know what I'd done because it was never good. It was never you helped some old lady across the street or you saved somebody from a burning bush. It was always my clothes were off, whatever it was. And that's just what happens to me when I drink. And so I started drinking that night. I blacked out. I have no idea what I did or where we went or what we did. It was probably inappropriate, I'm sure, because that's usually what happened once I started drinking. But what happened for me the next morning is I came to, I usually say that I woke up, but I realized that I never woke up. I always came to. And so I came to that next morning, and I had puked everywhere, really everywhere. There was puke in my clothes. I had it in my hair. It was just everywhere. And I had also, when you throw up outside, the local insects, there's a food source. And so in Florida, where I grew up, we have a lot of ant hills and ant farms and that kind of stuff. And so these ants found me and they found my legs. And so I woke up and I had ant bites all over my legs. And I was a mess. I just really was a mess. It was 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning. By that time, it was 110 and humid. If you've ever been in the South, it's humid in the summertime. And so I didn't know what happened, so I opened up the tent, and there's the neighborhood. Mom, Dad, his parents, him, the siblings. You know, everybody was out there waiting for me to make an appearance. And I tried to lie my way out of whatever it was that I was doing, and it just didn't work. If you know, you got the look. If you're an alcoholic of our type, you've gotten that look once, twice, 100 times. And that was going to be the very first day of a long string of those looks that I got when I did the things that I was doing out there, not meaning to, not wanting to, not setting out to do the things that I was going to do. And it wasn't the next day or the day after that or the day after that that drinking really took a hold of my life. I was 9 years old, for crying out loud. But what it did was I loved it. I never woke up after that and thought, I never want to do this again. I thought to myself, I can't wait to do this again and again and again and again. Now, I didn't really set out to puke all over myself, and I also didn't set out to wreck cars and treat people the way I was going to treat people and go to jail and all that stuff and show up for work 6 hours late or a couple of days late or whatever it was. But that's the kind of thing that I did because I didn't know that I couldn't stop. I love the fact that you read the third chapter here tonight, because I was always trying to control and enjoy my drinking. Always. I was always thinking that this time it was going to be a different effect and I was going to produce some other thing and something else was going to happen, and it never was. And I just started doing what I was doing, and at every opportunity I drank. I started stealing when I was from a young age. I'd go out into my father's beer box and I looked like this. I couldn't wait for him to go to bed at night. And I'd wait a sufficient amount of time for them to go to sleep, and I'd sneak out in the garage, and I'd open up that box. And I could just feel the sensation of that first drink before I ever took it. And I'd open up the box, and I'd grab that beer, and I'd pop that top, and it was all good. And I just was going to have one. And I'd start that one, and I didn't know that I had an allergy, and I'd start drinking again. And I'd head to the whiskey bottle and whatever else was in there. My father had this Italian liqueur called Drambuie. I'd never heard of it before. It's awful, awful stuff. I thought it was like something that you mix with something, and it just, but I didn't care. I drank for the effect. I drank for the effect. And I'll tell you another little story about when I was a little kid, and this is sort of what drinking was like for me. When I was about 4 or 5 years old, we had a babysitter. Her name was Susan, and she used to watch us when my parents would go out bowling or whatever they were doing, and I used to watch Susan shave her legs. And I was 4 or 5 years old. No one ever told me that little boys don't shave their legs. I didn't know that. And so one day after Susan had put the razor down and left the bathroom, I went into the bathroom, and I was going to shave my legs. And my friends laugh at this stuff. You're going to hear my pain, and my friends are going to laugh at me. And so I pick up that razor, and I start shaving my legs. But I didn't notice that Susan probably had shaving cream or some soap or whatever it was back in 1970 or whatever the heck it was. And so I grabbed a piece of skin off the bottom of my leg, and I pulled the razor up, and I started bleeding all over the place. And Susan comes into the bathroom, and she's laughing hysterically. And the next thing that she did was she took a bottle of rubbing alcohol, and she poured it on my leg. And I want to tell you, from that day to today, I've not had an obsession to shave my legs until they bleed and pour rubbing alcohol on them. But let me tell you that that's exactly what happened when I drank alcohol. It happened every time, time after time after time after time. I got through high school by the skin of my teeth. I also want to tell you that I'm a quitter. I'm going to quit everything. I'm going to start something, and I'm going to stop it. Because it's your fault. It's something. I was at school patrol when I was in the like fourth grade or fifth grade. I had a little orange badge. I thought I was really cool. I quit that for some other reason. God only knows why. I joined the band when I was in the sixth grade for some girl. She played the saxophone. I thought she was cute, so I wanted to play the saxophone. Don't know why that, you know, but that's the thought process. And I played the saxophone for a long time, and I was really good at it. When I was a sophomore in high school, I quit. And I remember the band director looking at me, and he goes, "You're quitting band?" Sure. You know, by this point in time, I'm drinking. I'm doing all other kinds of stuff, and I don't care. I didn't care about my actions. I didn't care how they affected you. I didn't care about anything. All I cared really about was drinking and doing my thing. I got out of high school. I wrecked my first car when I was about 18 years old, and this is what that looked like. I was supposed to go out with my sister. She was celebrating her 21st birthday, and I had decided that I was just going to stop by and see a friend of mine. He worked at the local 7-Eleven, and stopped and said hello, and he said, "Why don't you come out to the bar?" The bar that we drank at was about 30 miles away, and just have a couple drinks, and then I'm going to go out and visit, you know, with my sister and celebrate with her. And what happened that night is I started drinking, set up that allergy that I didn't know I had. And the next thing I knew, last thing I remember, I was standing out in the parking lot with a bottle of tequila in my hand up like this, and I blacked out, don't remember anything else. Came to the next morning, I was laying on a hospital gurney, and I woke up, I didn't wake up, and there were fluorescent lights above me like this. And I'm not a rocket scientist, but I had a sneaking suspicion something was wrong, because I could tell that I wasn't wearing clothes, that I had this weird hospital gown on, and I had like my socks, and there was a cop standing next to my bed. And again, I'm not a rocket scientist, but I know that's not good news. I know that that is not good news. And so the cop asked for my ID, you know, proceeded to explain to me that I had wrecked a car the night before. I'd smashed, ran a red light, smashed into a 1972 Lincoln Continental. I don't know if you've ever seen a 1972 Lincoln Continental. It looks sort of like the mothership. They're pretty big. And I hit the guy in such a way that he was able to get out of his car. My car caught fire. I used to have pictures in my big book. I used to carry it around with me. And he got out of the car, pulled me out, and that's how I ended up in the hospital. Didn't get a DUI from that. It was back in 1980-something, probably 80, 81. They didn't really care much about it. But I remember getting the sheet of paper when I left the hospital, and it said intoxicated. And I want to tell you the rest of that story, because pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization will not keep me sober. It will not get me sober, and it will not keep me sober. And that morning, I had nobody to call. Mom wasn't around. Sister wasn't around. I had no friends. Nobody really gave a crap. And I had to call a boss. I was working at McDonald's, not knocking McDonald's, great company, great place to work, loved being there. But at 18 years old, I was that's it. That was the only goal I had, is to drink and work at McDonald's. And I called Cheyenne. The other reason I tell that story is I'm the guy in the book that says, ain't it grandma the wind stopped blowing? That I keep thinking that when I got here that my drinking didn't affect anybody, didn't affect anybody but me. And if you're here tonight and you're sober, there's somebody that's at home tonight sleeping comfortably because you're not doing the things that you were doing. And it took me a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous to get that. And so I called Cheyenne, and she came and got me. Here I was. I had my arm in a sling. I had married the steering wheel with my face. So I had a broken nose, and I just looked a mess. And she brought me down to McDonald's, and I was sitting in that McDonald's at 6:30 in the morning with no clothes on. I had a hospital gown and no clothes underneath because they cut my clothes off. And I just sat there and drank coffee until they were able to get a hold of my sister to have them come get me. And that's the kind of guy that I was when I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that didn't stop me. I didn't stop drinking then. Came to my first meeting in December of 1982, and it looked like this. I went out on Thursday night with my friends. We used to go to this place where they served 25-cent drinks. Now, I don't know about you, but I couldn't say no to 25-cent drinks on a Thursday night. I had to be at work a lot of times at 5:30 in the morning, and that didn't matter. I was just going to go out and have a couple. And so we'd go out and start drinking, and that was it. So I was supposed to be at work that afternoon or that evening, and I went out with my friends and started drinking on Thursday night in Orlando, Florida. Came out of a blackout in New York City. And that's the truth. That's not embellishing. I'm not telling the story to make it any better. It's exactly what it was. I don't really know how all that happened. I have a vague recollection of having a fight with my mother, getting to the airport, calling the boss. Vague recollection, but I don't remember any of that stuff. So I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in December of 1982. My boss at the time had been around AA, and I know today that that was the seed that was planted. I didn't know that a seed was being planted then. I love what you talked about coming to AA, and you had your father, and I didn't know the seed was being planted because I didn't want to be here. I didn't hear the music of AA. I didn't hear you guys. I didn't identify with you guys. In fact, I didn't want any of what you had because I was 19 years old. There's no way that I'm an alcoholic. There's no way that I'm done. There's no way. No way. And so I had to come to a meeting a week, and I came to a Thursday night meeting. And every week after the meeting, I went back out to the bar that I used to drink in, and I wasn't drinking. I never drank. And I remember I was sitting in a meeting, a 12 o'clock meeting in Winter Park, Florida, and it was a really big meeting, and they had this weird little shape, and the room, there was another room, and they went all around the room, and everybody introduced themselves. And I remember it getting to me, and I'm thinking, what am I going to say? What am I going to say? What am I going to say? They're all saying, I'm Nancy, I'm an alcoholic. I'm Joe, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Joe. Hi, Nancy. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm not an alcoholic, but I don't want to be here. And so it got to me, and I said, my name's Jackie, and I'm an alcoholic. And my lips started quivering, and I almost started crying. And my friend John, who I'd made a friend in AA, was sitting next to me. I remember him looking at me and he goes, feels good, doesn't it? And I said, yes, but what I was thinking was, hell no, it does not feel good, because I'm not. I'm not like you guys. I'm a my case is different kind of guy. I'm a you guys have to do it, I don't have to do it kind of guy. That's the way I am today, and that's the way I was then. And so I came to meetings for about 90 days, and after about 90 days, I was out at the bar one night. Bartender said, what do you have? And no sponsor, no God, no steps, no commitments, no being in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, I'll have a rum and coke. And that's the start of where it was. And I wasn't the next day or the day after that or next week or the week after that. But eventually I was back doing the things that I was doing, blacking out, wetting the bed, doing the things that I did not want to do, getting drunk and doing all kinds of crazy things, going to jail. If you're here tonight and you haven't been to jail, it's okay. You don't have to go to jail in order to be an alcoholic. The line of the book says, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. And I can answer both of those questions satisfactorily then, but I didn't want to. And so for the next couple of years, I just you know, was just pissing my life away. I had no goals. That one time, that one brief period of time that I tried to get sober, I tried to get it all together again, and I went back to college because that was going to be the answer. I was going to go back to school. I was doing well. And by about, like, the middle of the first semester, I was drinking again, and the grades, sunk, and all of a sudden I didn't care anymore, and then I'm done. Because I really don't care. I really don't care. And I got arrested a few more times. I was living at home with my mother. My parents had gotten divorced by this time. And just doing what we do, doing what I do, and not realizing that my actions were affecting anybody else. And what eventually happened for me is I got arrested several times in rapid succession. I'll tell you one story about not getting arrested that was really important. I went out to a bottle club after the bar closed that we drank in, and I ended up in a blackout doing exactly what I normally do. At 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, I woke up, and I was at a stoplight in a major intersection in the town that I lived in, and the cops were standing outside the car. Again, not a very good sign, but that's what was happening. And so he had me pull the car over. I had puked everywhere, and the car smelled like throw up, and which it always did. And he called my mom to come get me. He didn't take me to jail. I don't know why he did that, but he did. And so he called my mom, and she came to get me. And I kept doing what I was doing. And one night on a Sunday, I went out one more time. And my mom said, this time if you go out, I'm not going to come get you out of jail. And I heard the words, but I didn't really believe her. And I'm so grateful. I call her every year on my AA birthday and thank her. Call her all the time anyway, but I call her especially on my AA birthday and tell her thank you for not answering the phone that day. Because I don't know if I'd be here. Somebody else would be here. Somebody else would be talking. I'd probably be drunk somewhere, still be locked up. And so I don't know what happened over the next couple of weeks. I don't know why the one day was any different than any other. I didn't wake up one morning in jail or in any other compromising situation that I'd been in the day before. But I was driving home from work one day, and this thought came to me that I wanted to kill myself, because that's usually the thought that came to me anyway. And so all of a sudden the next thought was I can come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd like to tell you that I walked in the door and I saw the steps hanging on the wall and I saw what you guys were doing and I wanted it right away, but I didn't. I'm a My Case is Different kind of guy, and it took me a little while to find out that I have alcoholism. And see, there's a difference. And if you don't know that, here's the difference. If you have a drinking problem, you stop drinking. Problem solved. It's Saturday night. You're at home. You don't need to. I don't need to drive down to San Diego not to do this. If drinking's my problem, I don't need to be here. But I have alcoholism, and alcoholism does not care what I did yesterday. Alcoholism only cares what I'm going to do today, and the spiritual answer that I found in these steps only care what I'm willing to do today. And so I eventually found a sponsor. I found a home group. I found this group of people that were studying the book. I'm so grateful. When you talked about the man or the person that saved your life, this man, his name was Curtis McTurner. And he was a 55-year-old guy. We had absolutely nothing in common. Nothing. We weren't from the same town. We didn't look alike. We didn't talk alike. But that man had something that I knew that I wanted. He had that spark in his eye. He had that light about him. And he had this way of just walking into a room that I hadn't seen before. And the next week in that meeting, I went up to Curtis after the meeting. I was about 4 years sober. I had kind of tried sponsorship, not really very successfully on my end, not on theirs. And I asked Curtis if he would help me. I said, I'm 4.5 years sober and I'm just crazy. I didn't know it that I was backing out of AA one step at a time. And he said, sure, absolutely. And what we did was we got together every week and we read the book. And he took me this through the steps as they're outlined in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the only thing that I know today. It's the solution that I found then, and it's the solution that I have today. It's those steps as they're outlined in our literature, in our textbook, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did what he did. He didn't ask me to do 150,000 things. He didn't really ask me to do anything. I just did what he did because I knew that it was working. I knew that he had a life that I didn't have. And so I started doing what he was doing. I went through the steps with him. I did an inventory out of the book. I found out that I'm not a victim. That it wasn't your fault or my parents' fault or my job's fault or nobody's fault. It was all these things. I had set the ball rolling in a lot of cases, and I got free. I hear a lot of people say, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I felt like I was at home. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I still felt like I did not belong here. And you know why? because I wasn't doing what you were doing. I was still drinking your coffee, eating your donuts, saying your words, doing the stuff, but I really wasn't doing any of the things that you guys were doing. I had no commitment. I didn't have anything. And so I did what he asked me to do, and I finished those steps with him. I went over to his house on a particular Tuesday morning and did a fist step with him and told him things that I was going to take to my grave. I wasn't going to tell anybody. I wasn't going to tell anybody that I was molested. I wasn't going to tell anybody that somebody did the things that they had done to me. But I was willing to do that because I didn't want to drink again, and I didn't want to live the way that I was living. And I started doing the things that he was doing. I started sponsoring guys. We were talking about this on the way down here. There was a military base around the corner in Orlando, and the guys from the treatment center would come. And I got the opportunity. There's a line in the doctor's opinion where he says that Bill called and asked for the privilege of coming and talking to the people in town's hospital. And I got the privilege of going to the Navy base every week and working with these guys on the base and going through the book with them. And I've had the privilege of doing that over and over and over and over again. And I hope I never forget that it is a privilege. It's not a right. I didn't earn that seat. And if I don't do these things today, I'll be drunk and dead or whatever. But I don't want to do that. I went to school. I got a bachelor's degree. I got a master's degree. I'm not telling you that because I'm smart. I'm telling you that because I was told that I had to. I remember the sponsor that I had at the time said, you got to tell people that kind of stuff because that's what happens here in AA. I do AA, and I do exactly what you guys asked me to do. I sponsor guys. I'm sponsored. I don't have a sponsor in name only. My sponsor is 50-some years sober, and I talk to him on a regular basis. I call him just about every day, and I talk to him, and I tell him the truth. Even a lot of days when I don't want to. There are things that I've done 28 years sober that I didn't want to have to tell him. But I got to tell him because I don't want to drink. I don't want to take the chance that I'm gonna forget this good life. And I got a chance to move out here with the company that I work for. I've been there 21 years now. And I moved out here to California in 2006. And I got busy again in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was kind of on the skirts of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started behaving badly. I won't tell you all those details because in the very beginning I said we'll share in a general way. I'm not going to take my fist step up here. I've told you a lot of things that I didn't tell anybody else, but there's a few other details you don't need to know. And I got another sponsor, and he asked me, was I willing to be sponsored? And I had never heard that before. And what it meant for me was I was willing to do what he asked me to do, and I became willing to do that. A couple of years ago, he died suddenly. I got a call at work, and he had had a heart attack or something happened in his kitchen. And 4 or 5 days later, I had another sponsor. And Johnny's been my sponsor for a little over 2 years. He's an active member of my home group, does the things that I want to do. He's busier than I am. And so I try to keep up with him because I want to have that life that he has, that spark in his eye, spring in his step, and I want to have the good life that he has. I'll say one more thing, and I'll shut up. There's a line in the book that says, my friend promised. In Bill's story, it says, my friend promised. He's talking about Ebby Thatcher told him, my friend promised when these things were done. He's talking about the steps. He's not talking about don't drink and go to meetings, don't drink no matter what, don't drink if your butt falls off. He's not talking about any of that stuff. He's talking about the steps. My friend promised when these things were done, I would have the elements of a way of living which solved all my problem. And that's what's happened with me today, and I'm grateful for that. Thank you.